Are you ready? Couple of details from last time I wanted to follow up on that I said I would follow up on. The size of the atom, I was a little bit off. I'll read you. A single water droplet contains more than a million, million, billion atoms. An atom contains a lot of empty space relative to its size. Try to imagine what an atom looks like. Visualize for a moment that an atom is the size of a football stadium. The nucleus then would be about the size of a marble. I said pin, not the size of a marble, lying in the middle of the 50-yard line. Carrying on the football stadium analogy, the electron's nearest nucleus would be orbiting near the 25-yard line. The outermost electrons would be flying around the farthest seats of the stadium, just to give you an idea what dimensions we're talking about. And I didn't know this, maybe you know this too, but all atoms are roughly the same size. Can you confirm that?
The periodic chart, as you go down,
do they get
bigger.
They do get bigger?
Yeah, because you got more levels.
No. But according to this, the number of electrons they contain do not affect their size. That's what this is. Is that wrong? It doesn't sound right to me. But.
Well, you get more and more levels, and so that the size in the sense of what you see in experiments are bigger.
But, yeah, that's the effect of the atom. Do we know about the size of the atom?
And the weight, of course.
Weight's different, but the physical diameter he's saying is the same, no matter how many.
Right, maybe the levels don't put that much.
That's what he's saying.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying. I don't know. But I just wanted to clarify, because I said pin. Jed, we talked about the jed. Remember, we were talking about the head. Who's it?
You said million, million, billion.
Yeah.
Sounds like Carl Sagan.
It's a lot of atoms. Would be the basic point there.
Yes.
I bet you got that. Here's a jed.
Here's a what?
A jed column, and here's a jed column. We talked about it as the, in Egypt, it represents one stage in the resurrected Osiris. We talked about that with respect to the head dream. And here, I don't know the exact, what do they say here? I guess this is Anubis, who is the guide to the other world. And he's working on an embalming. It's what's on the table. And Jed is representative of the of protection, because Osiris arose, then he'll arise. So you can just pack up, see what that is.
How do you spell it?
D-J-E-D. D, like dog. D-J-E-D.
Oh.
It came up because Jung amplified the head with the head of Osiris. Remember, we talked about the myth of the dismemberment of Osiris. And then he's thrown in the water, and then when he comes up on the shore, his body is encompassed by a tree, swallowed up by a tree. And the dead is Osiris swallowed up by the tree. And then his wife finds him and gets him out, but he gets lost again, and that's when Set chops him up into 14 pieces, and that's what the head reference goes to. But it's an image you'll come across a lot. It's not terribly important to our text, but I thought I'd just pass it on to you.
On those walls, it means protection.
Yeah, the walls. It's an image of Osiris, who's been brought to shore, and there in that one picture, it represents protection. But basically, it represented the resurrected Osiris, or the promise of resurrection of Osiris. Orphic creation myth. We talked about it. I thought I'd just read it to you. It's just so beautiful. I was pretty close. We talked about this because of the head and egg theme in that dream of that mathematician. According to the Orphic story, Night was a bird with black wings. She conceived of the wind. Isn't that beautiful? The darkness and the wind fertilize each other. And laid her silver egg in the gigantic lap of darkness. From the egg sprang the son of the rushing wind, a god with golden wings. He is called Eros, god of love. And then it goes on. He then creates the world.
Eros.
So the wind and the darkness can make Eros?
Yeah. I just think that's so beautiful that if you've ever been in a deep depression or in despair, that is really the state in which the wind can conceive. And that's really what it's meant to be. And then out of that is born Eros. And Eros, then, your love is what really creates the quality of your life.
What page is that?
This is Kereni, the Gods of the Greeks, page 1617. Let's see, a little more show and tell. Just Carol asked me about the dream on page 36. Yeah, it should be I and double I. It's a typo. It was just a typo. I just wanted to make sure I got that right. One more detail. I don't want to harp on this, but I do feel we should look at both sides of this guy, Holly. And I brought along, I referred to you several times, Yaffe's comments on him, so I thought I'd read you what she wrote about it. This is from Harvest, 2002, volume 48, number 2. It's an interview. And I'm doing this for several reasons. Let me read it first, then I'll explain.
Volume 48.
Number 2, Harvest, is published in England. In 1955, I became Jung's secretary. From that moment on, my relationship with Wolfgang Pauli intensified. It seemed to me, and I believe I'm not mistaken, that his personal involvement was more directed towards Jung than towards me. Often he came to see me full of questions, which I noted down and passed on to Jung. At the next occasion, I informed Pauli of Jung's reactions and answers. I was, so to speak, a bridge between Pauli and Jung. Sometimes I had the impression that Pauli had inhibitions to confront Jung directly, but my egotism enjoyed my role. I'm sorry, that's why I don't like her. My egotism enjoyed my role. I was curious to learn what these two men had to say to each other. Later, there was a crisis in our relationship. Pauli was taken by a sudden and, for me, completely unexpected affect. He criticized Jungian psychology and, consequently, also me. I felt very offended, began to cry, and asked him to leave the apartment. After that, we seldom saw each other. Shortly after Pauli's death, I experienced something tragic. Mrs. Pauli told me that one of the last things Pauli had said before he passed away was, "The only person I would love to see now is C.G. Jung." When I told this to Jung, he was silent and looked sad. He would have much appreciated it if Pauli, earlier on, had come to see him and had not avoided him. We're going to see, the reason I read that is to kind of give us a feeling for the split personality, not split personality in the psychiatric sense, but Pauli is going to be talking all along how he wants to understand how he affects people. And then he does something like this with absolutely no intention to go back and figure out what happened. And that's what people do who are split. They say one thing one minute and they do a next. It's going to come up again later, not this particular issue, but we will need to understand. Jung took a particular stance to Pauli, and common sense would argue, geez, Jung, why did you do that? But I think he did that knowing that if there are some people that if you give them something, all they do is screw you. And Pauli was such a guy. So just keep that in mind, again, not to belittle the guy, because we also want to look at his many accomplishments, but to know we are dealing with a guy with a huge saboteur. And when dealing with people like that, you've got to be very, very careful. I think that's pretty much all from last time. Anything you want to go back to? Do you want to read what you got?
I'll just add to a couple of things. You know, last time I was talking about the painting, And I said it seemed to, the painting seemed to be talking about the sort of thinking that had to do with the body
mm-hmm.
or the stomach, because the head
mm-hmm.
and the egg came out of the stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And synchronistically, last week in the newspaper, they said that there's a stomach, they've discovered a stomach hormone that boosts brain power. There's a hormone created in the stomach that is involved in forming memories and finding new knowledge.
So part of the brain's in the stomach, I think. That's part of the idea, right?
Well, I guess that they hadn't before seen the chemical connection.
Oh,
now they have a physical connection.
Yeah.
That there's something, the stomach is actually doing something physically to the brain.
Oh, I see.
So I thought that was an interesting mm-hmm. connection.
Mm-hmm.
And then also last week, I heard a little bit about what physics is doing with the transcendent right now.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you that took number and time, if you remember, we talked about simultaneity.
Mm-hmm.
Where two photons that are
mm-hmm.
separated, that have originated in a certain atom,
mm-hmm.
if you do something to one, it will affect the other.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about, well, why can't that be looked at in the idea of synchronicity?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how synchronicity works. And evidently, some of the physicists are starting to look at that. There's this Dr. Goswami, and he's saying that experiment, which is called the aspect experiment with the photons, shows that there's a transcendent aspect to matter that affects it. And from this, I don't know if we agree with everything else he has to say, but from this he has said that this proves that consciousness is the source of creation,
yeah,
is what he says. And he goes on to say how this experiment proves the existence of God. And I mean, there are some things he leaves out, I think, because he talks about consciousness of the human being, but he doesn't talk about absolute knowledge or the consciousness that is Sophia.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure that he works that as a Jungian thought, as you might in Jungian thought, but it was interesting
yeah.
that they're working on it nonetheless.
This guy, does it have the name of this book there?
I think there is a book here.
I have it.
But it's his name is Amit Goswami.
Yeah, the guy, remember we did the spirit in place thing, and that physicist, Kashyap Visvanathan, he recommended
this book.
And he said as a physicist, he thought the guy's ideas were solid work, because some of these physicists will say that the pop physics stuff is takes liberties with the nature of physics, but he seemed to feel the guy's physics were solid.
Well, I read a critique of him, and they didn't argue with his physics, but they said his conclusions were too general.
Yeah, that's my feeling, but I haven't really done enough looking into him to
mm-hmm.
to say. I forget the name of his.
Well, I have a website for this article. It might be easier to copy it. It's kind of long. It's up at the top, if anybody is interested in looking at this any further.
I'll see if I can find that book. I'm pretty sure I've still got it. I'll bring it along if you want to see.
But this scientist is one of the scientists in the movie What the Bleep, do we know?
Yeah, that's right.
And those are the scientists that are trying to understand consciousness from and incorporate the idea of the transcendent.
It's very exciting, I think. Thanks. Quick review. We had the fire, we had the oscillations, we had the flood in the Persian, we had the two heads, that's where we left off. No, then we had the dream seven is where we left off, page 36. The blonde woman who he thinks is going to be a prostitute asks him to dictate an essay. And then he has that very important image, which we're going to see again, of Christ with a black and white striped nose. Do you want to try to sum up your understanding of Christ with the black and white striped nose before we go on?
The future lies in the union of opposites.
Okay. And through this, my understanding of the sacrament is to be completely changed. What's that mean?
There's a new God image.
Yeah. What's really going on behind all of this stuff is the evolution of a new God image. So we start talking about science, but we end up talking about theology. Sorry.
Following up on the stomach analogy, wasn't it a North American tribal Indian chief who said, you white men think with your heads, we think that's crazy, we think with our hearts.
Yeah.
But that's I don't know where it was.
Oh, that's Mountain Lake. Yeah, he visited in the Pueblos. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Let's go to 37. I'm reading after the quote, Christ in the dream. Let's see where I am. Also has a connection with this creative power, which especially concerns his nose. All we're saying now is what Tom already said. The nose can mean the psychological function of intuition. One could have a nose for something. In this dream, however, it is not clear exactly what such a well developed intuition could serve. I mean, I can't quite believe he said that. I think it is clear what it could serve. The evolution of a new God image. In any case, this talent of the Christ figure is to be in service of a new God image. And to me, that's what the intuition is about. It's looking ahead to how our world is split based on our God image. Did you follow the next paragraph there about the old God image and the new God image with respect to the Kepler and Flood dialogue or diatribe? Do you remember the Kepler Flood issue? Kepler being saying that the universe, that the regularity of the movements of the planets is a sign or an analogy or an indication of the regularity of the Creator. And Flood was saying that what makes the universe tick is the soul within it. And Kepler was saying it's sort of like God has stood outside and given the thing a flick, and it's moving as a result of the input of God, but the daily details of that movement are all pre-arranged. Does that make sense?
For Kepler. Pre-arranged, like from the beginning of time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That the movements of the if you want to see what God is, look at the regularity of the universe. There you see the laws of God. And that's how we know God exists. And God made the thing as a reflection of himself. But what's the big problem there?
Because it isn't regular.
Yeah, right, regularity. Mm-hmm. It's not regular. And quantum physics has made the first foray into that new understanding of the irregularity of things. And it stops short of saying that there's anything beyond matter about that. But what we're doing is realizing that's the opening for understanding what synchronicity is, because synchronicity is that unpredictability of the universe. Or makes its way into us through that unpredictability of the universe. So the new God image is one moving away from the regularity.
From regular, yeah.
The anima mundi, the soul of the world, would be Kepler's word for, I'm not even sure what to say, that substance or that agency that works in a synchronicity.
What, you said the anima mundi?
Anima mundi, soul of the world.
That was Flood's term, actually.
That was Flood's term.
Flood's term, but you're saying Kepler?
Did I say Kepler?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Wrong. Flood.
Okay.
Sorry.
And you identified the anima mundi with the agency that would generate?
Synchronicity. it's a bad analogy, but if you can, just work with it figuratively, it's like there's a vapor permeating everything. And a synchronicity is when that vapor manifests in time and space. Very crude analogy, but...
The Buddhist thing of when form is emptiness, emptiness is form. I mean, when emptiness and form, there's no difference between them, which for the Western mind is unconceivable, but within the Zen Koan kind of approach, that seems to be talking about what you get.
We certainly are dealing with paradox.
Yeah.
Paradox.
Okay, 38. I didn't give you the quote because I didn't have it when I typed the thing up, but I got it now. This is Pali just saying what I just said. And it's in a letter to Marcus Fiertz. Remember Marcus Fiertz? Fiertz David, who wrote Villa Vistries? Well, this is one of his sons. And there is a book, which I think thought I brought along, which is a published account of his a correspondence with Pali. Here it is. It is awfully difficult reading.
Is that a published book or
mm-hmm.
that?
Yeah, it's a published book. It's one of those books that are like $250.
Oh.
So I broke the law. I think it's published in Holland or something like that. I think the letters are in German, but there is a translation in the back in English.
So are you going to use any stuff from that book to...
I'll probably have to, yeah.
Amplify what's going on?
Not at this particular moment, but these are the kinds of things I've got to turn to now that this is done. So this is what Pali wrote to Marcus Fiertz. And nothing new, just putting what we've said in his words. In the 17th century, the anima mundi went out of fashion. This idea faded away. And it was just through the resulting gap that proportion, geometry, and mathematics forced themselves into the ideas concerning motion and forced those interested to use empiricism and measurement. This process can be seen distinctly not only in Kepler, but in Galileo. Nothing new. Just saying how this idea of the anima mundi was pushed out because it was a qualitative concept, and what the physicists or astronomers were working with was a qualitative concept that could be measured and predictably examined. So somehow, again, nothing new, but what we're doing, in effect, is we're going back to a previous time in history and looking at or trying to recover in a way appropriate to our own sense of modern thinking, this idea of the anima mundi. Those ancients had something right. They didn't express it in a way that we can accept, but they were trying to express something that we express in a term of synchronicity.
Psychologically, that there was a regression, that sometimes a regression is necessary in order to really move forward.
Right.
It must be the idea of the stomach.
What?
What is it?
The stomach?
Memory.
The gut instinct?
The past, incorporating the past.
Are you saying that synchronicity is a push?
No, when he was talking about the passage you just read, which says in the 17th century the anima mundi fell out of fashion, and so we're having to go back to that time to reconsider what was pushed away by the emerging science of astronomy and astrology, and physics. And just in science in general. And I was suggesting that sounds psychologically, on an individual or whatever level, of a regression, which I suggest was in fact the case.
Yeah, it's in a sense, it's a historical regression, but it's going back to get something which belongs to the future.
Which needs to be integrated in order for the current world, the new world, to emerge. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm talking psychologically speaking, mm-hmm. on an individual level now. Cultural level.
But if you talk to a rationalist, they will say, well, this is just superstition. Yeah. We've gotten over that. I had someone actually tell me that once. This is just superstition. My grandfather used to think like this. Hmm. So, putting this a little bit then in a historical context, that's all we're doing. In contrast, Newton, remember Newton, he was he's the guy that really put this all down, finally. The quote there on 38, this most beautiful system of the sun, planets, and comets could only proceed from the counsel and dominion of an intelligent and all-powerful being. This being governs all things, not as the soul of the world, but as Lord over all. So the soul of the world then would be the anima mundi.
You wouldn't know from reading this. He studied alchemy and was all concerned with
it. Well, they were looking at the beginning of the fundamental split in the Western psyche. Fundamental split. Which now it seems to be up to us to begin to address. Yeah, remember, Newton was an alchemist. Isaac Newton was an alchemist.
Do you know if anybody has ever tried to piece together what is finding or conclusion were in the alchemy yet?
It's been written about, yeah.
I thought it was that.
It's fairly recent.
Is that right?
Yeah. I'll make a note.
If you find it, Tom, let us know.
Because a long time ago, it was said that he just hid it away, he didn't talk about it.
I would imagine that was the case probably for a lot of the time, if not all of the time.
Yeah.
Gary.
Yeah.
When he says, okay, this being governs over things, not as the soul of the world, but as Lord over all, what's the distinction? I'm just not.
Well, to us it sounds like a verbal, I don't know, just like verbal rambling. But the idea is, If the world has a soul, then there's an unpredictability to the world. And if it's God who is governing, the nature of God is lawful. So that the world is lawful, so that our research into the world is possible, and I think it's fair to say there's a political overtone here. Mm-hmm. We are not heretics. Because what we're investigating are the laws of God. Because remember, you know, Galileo was put under house arrest for the duration of his life.
Really?
Yeah. for his support of the Copernican theory. But I think for our purposes, if you look at it as really for our purposes, the key thing is that that the mind is beginning to be fascinated by the regularity of things. This is a step in the evolution of consciousness. And if you can put yourself back in that time, that may help. Now, for us, it's old stuff, but think how fascinating that must have been to realize all those planets and ping pong balls and billiard balls, they all follow the same law. That was an enormously exciting thing at the time. Because prior to that, there was no recognition of any greater principle. So they suddenly come upon a greater principle and they link it up with God because God is the greater principle. I remember as a kid, we learned physics in high school in a kind of a learn-by-doing physics class. We weren't taught laws. We were given like billiard balls and roll them, hit them, measure them. And to see how that stuff really does follow predictable proportions was exciting as a kid. But I think that's what these people were going through. Now, we are at the other end of that, where that has actually inhibited our research into things that weren't, that are not predictable. And what we're up against now is investigating things that are not predictable, namely synchronicity. And quantum physics broke through that model when it says that the actions of the electrons in the atom are not predictable. Turn your attention to back to the illustrations, figure 4.1. So we won't be spending a lot of time on it, but so we are acquainted with Flood's thinking. This is Flood's diagram of the world. And the Holy Trinity above emanates its influence down, which is a light. The Earth emanates its influence up, which is a darkness. And where those two converge, the sun is born. So, one of the things that we get out of that is the world is still a continual creation. That sun is constantly being born out of the crossing of Earth and God, or Earth and the Holy Trinity. Now, I have got to confess to you, I don't understand this next dream. Then we can work on it together. I mean, I do and I don't. Page 38, the voice of the blonde, remember the blonde, says, Flood is also Kirchhoff. Give a lecture on thermal equilibrium. Then I give a lecture on Kirchhoff's laws of emission and absorption and about the equilibrium of light energy and material energy, but draw Flood's figures into the formulae. Now the Flood's figures would be what we just looked at. I did a little digging for Mr. Kirchhoff. Actually, I remember studying him. He was working around 1860. And what he discovered was the velocity of electrons in wires was almost exactly the same as the velocity of light. Now, why is that important? Because he didn't draw the conclusion, but it set the stage shortly thereafter for another physicist, Maxwell, like in Maxwell's Hammer Comes Down, like the Beatles. Maxwell realized that light and electricity are the same thing. The only difference is the wavelength. Does that make sense? Light is just electricity vibrating much, 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 much faster. The other thing that he did, which is important now to quantum physics, is, remember we talked about the spectral lines? Does everyone remember that? No. I'll review it. If you heat a metal, it gives off light. And, or you heat any element, remember the periodic table in chemistry class? If you heat any element, it will begin to give off light. And it will give off light of a certain number of bands of color. I don't have any pictures with me. We talked about it in another class. And for, let's say, copper, those colors will always be constant. There may be like five different bands of color in the light, which you see as maybe orange. If you break it up, that orange will be a mixture of maybe orange, yellow, purple, red, blue. And the exact color will always be the same for the material. And the relative strength of those colors with respect to each other will always be the same. So you may have real bright orange, kind of bright red, a little less bright blue, say. You take another copper, piece of copper, do the same thing, they'll be the same. Same colors, same relationship of the strength of each color to each other. And all they do is take a very, 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 very fancy prism. You ever done that with a prism and sunlight, and you get that rainbow? Except with sunlight, all those colors are there. But with these elements, just certain colors are there. And there'll be a space, a black space between those other colors, if the material is pure.
Carol, remember the artist who was following me at downtown Patty? He did the copper, and he heated it, and he got that. He kind of explained that to me.
The clearest one we know is neon. Neon. Now, we got different color neon signs because they add other elements to the neon. But if you just take pure neon and as a gas and you put electricity through it and heat it, it'll start to glow, and that glow will have a predictable color pattern. Well, that's how they figured out how the atom is built. Because each of those color patterns, each of those light frequencies will represent the level of energy of one of the atoms in that electron. Now I'm putting it very simply. It's not quite that simple. But by investigating the colors, they could begin to tell what the various energy levels of that atom are, and then they could calculate from their formula what the energy should be, and when they started to agree, they realized they were onto something. Now, Kirchhoff, what he did was he made that technically possible by figuring out how to make metals more pure. More pure. And they then began to examine, the word is the spectrum of these various elements. Then they looked at the light of the sun, and they began to figure out what colors were coming from the sun, and therefore what the constituent elements of the sun were. All this like in 1860. Now, they still didn't understand what was going on inside that atom that made that happen. That's what Pauli did. But they were examining the effects that led to people like Pauli questioning the nature of the atom. See, none of that could be explained prior to Pauli and Bohr and Heisenberg. Interesting, the guy he worked with was Bunsenburger. So I guess Mr. Bunsen got the flame hot enough, so these guys were just working on it. Now, I don't know what that means, but I told you anyway. There are a couple of levels of meaning here, and I wish I knew enough about Kirchhoff to do this, but I don't. But remember I said that Pauli felt that underneath physical theories were psychological images. This is an example.
Can you say that again?
Remember Pauli felt that underneath underneath our scientific theories they were mythological images. Oh, same. Yeah, same. There are mythological images with a psychological meaning. I don't know what to say about this. But I think there's a lot more here than our author has picked up. I don't know if
it's like it's fragment.
I just don't know. I don't know, Ted, if you know enough about Kirchhoff to see anything more. Yeah, I don't. Pauli does say, and I think these are the kind of dreams that got him thinking, the last sentence after that first paragraph of the dream. This dream seems interesting to me because in the archetypal background of, because in it, the archetypal background of physical theories comes to light.
What you were saying about the lights, that sounded predictable. I mean, they're always the same, they're always the same strength, it's always... I don't understand that.
I don't either.
Flood was the unpredictable.
It's like he's talking about a progression of the images. You know, here was floods.
Yeah.
How it affected flood, and here also Kirchhoff, and then you, Pauli.
Yeah. The only thing I get to, and bear with me as I think out loud here, is, you know, the implication of Kirchhoff is that the energy that you put into a system is the energy you get out of a system. That's what he means by equilibrium. That's a thermodynamic concept. And we learned about it in my training in electronics. The electricity that goes into a place has to be the electricity that comes out of the place. Well, that seems so basic, but at the time that wasn't known. And so that what Pauli is saying, he's working with a Kirchhoff, is about equilibrium. Well, we can think one thing Pauli wasn't, was about equilibrium. Otherwise, he wouldn't have popped off at Fra'iate like that. So I can kind of see its personal relevance. Now, the only other thing I can see is that in the flood picture we looked at, the sun was being created by the convergence of two factors. Did I say that right? Yeah, the sun was being created by the convergence of two factors, the Holy Trinity and the Earth. So that's a kind of equilibrium. Out of their convergence, something emerges with that energy.
Gary, for what it's worth, what jumped out at me is Pauly wouldn't have been able to do his work if Kirchhoff hadn't made the metals pure enough to see the spectrum. So I was thinking the purity, getting rid of the prejudices, getting to be able to look at.
That's it. I think that's it.
That's what jumped out at me. Anyway.
You see what we do if we work in a group? Okay, let's go with that now. Flood is also Kirchhoff. That's it. What Kirchhoff did was purify the metals. So if we take Flood as the point of view which honors synchronicity, right? You see why I say that? That means Pauly has to purify his metals before he can really understand synchronicity. And the big synchronicity is going to be, of course, von Franz down the road. And he wasn't able to purify his metals for her. He couldn't stand to be with her as a friend for whom he had erotic feelings. He couldn't stand the heat that would have purified. Yeah.
You said Pauly needed to purify his metals before...
Before he could really understand what synchronicity is. That's very helpful, Ian. Thanks. Power motivation. See, with the synchronicity... And let's go back to think about why our synchronicities. We talk about synchronicity like it's so wonderful or this great new cosmic principle. But synchronicities often demand a sacrifice. You want to do this, but the synchronicity suggests you do that. And if you don't... If you're not able to give up your own power drive, you can't hear the synchronicity. See, Jung's basic idea, again, this may be, you may know this, but it may be helpful to put this, what I'm going to say in this context now. Jung's basic idea is that there is an agency in you, at least as good, maybe better, than your own ego. That's the self. So what we're trying to help ourselves do is become selves and not egos. Well, the self may want one thing and the ego may want another. And a synchronicity is in support of the self.
That just goes along then with what I heard you say on the Sophia tapes, that when Sophia is working, if we do accept that, then, I mean, the one way we'll know it is that the energy, we'll have the energy increase in energy, libido, and that energy in and energy out. I mean, if we have enough energy to give up the... power drive or whatever we need to give up to get closer to the self within the energy somehow. That's one way we can read whether we've accepted the Sophia.
Yep. And the sacrifice, as we'll see, is going to be his role as Herr Professor. I don't know if you know the role of a professor in Germanic cultures. They're like better than God. So, and the wives of professors are called Frau Doctor Professor. And they will use that still today. You'll hear somebody say, "Ich bin Frau Doctor Professor so-and-so, so-and-so." And whoop, all the shop stops, and that's when it gets taken care of. And they're paid an enormously high salary. I I don't know exactly what professions, but I, you know, I taught in a public school. I keep in touch with some of my colleagues. A high school teacher starts at about $150,000. So professors are gods. And for Pally to have accepted this feeling for this, you know, younger 20-year-old woman, a woman 20 years old younger, who called him on his poop, was not something Herr Professor wanted to have to deal with. He had made it. He was like, we don't even have a category. Because what we have at the top of our society are politicians and jocks. They have academics. In a way, it's got its own problems, but in a way, you have to kind of admire them because they are very cultured and accomplished people. And that's what he would have had to give up. And what he could never swallow, surrendering. Always right, always, you know, wherever he was, people were fluttering, you can be sure. A guy, and a Nobel Prize winner to boot. So I think you're right there. The only other thing to mention there is that it's the blonde. And what we're going to see, we've got the blonde and the Persian. And pretty soon they're going to become the same, which is a very good sign. But unfortunately, I don't think it ever really happens in Pally's life. The beauty of what Pally is doing, again, to go back and give him his due, is that he is a Nobel laureate physicist, and he is messing around with this kind of stuff. He is at least thinking outside the box. And he was interested in what is the irrational nature of scientific creativity. Why is that important? Because that then is where human feeling can plug into the process. And as we have seen, the great problem with science is it's done without value considerations. It's done for government grants, for profit motives, or for the sheer power of discovering knowledge, with an enormously destructive outcome, therefore. So I think this work of Pally's was extremely valuable. We'll be coming back to it several times, trying to see how a scientific theory has a mythological backdrop, because we know how to interpret myth. And then we can start bringing our psychological tools to the personality of the scientist. For some reason I saw 5 minutes. Your tape must be short. But he could accept this as long as it was a concept. That's why it's the blonde. As long as he was discussing theoretical matters, he was okay. And his contributions there are going to be really an enormous gift to us. Thanks to him, Jung published on synchronicity. He helped Jung formulate his ideas on synchronicity. In this area, he was a very creative individual. Just don't ask him to take it inside and what it means about his love life. That's the Persian. So again, we're seeing the split. For our purposes, I think we can accept what he's given as a gift. And, you know, with that tool, begin to look, at least in scientists who want to work on themselves. We have some guide now how to get behind their theories to their images so that we can interpret their scientific work just the way we can interpret the work of an artist. Science can become a mode of self-awareness for the scientist, just like the artist. Pally wouldn't take the leap inside, but we can take the leap inside. But he's begun to show us a new path. I think that's pretty cool.
Is that similar at all to you see where you have a group kind of surgery situation and there'll be a person who can understand Everybody has this problem with AC. They have trouble dealing with the general problem.
Yeah. That's the one. Usually they become psychologists. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, but it seems like in this life we're not going to get out of it without going through that sacrifice.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think with my mother who's 85, I mean, you know, if you don't, I mean, your body gives it out on you. And you, if you don't accept psychologically, emotionally what's happening to you in bits and chunks along the way, then boom.
Yeah.
You know, you have to, by the end of life, you have to accept.
There's
you're not going to get your way.
Right.
Your body is speaking, is going to speak and have the power, and have power over your ego. It rules.
Absolutely.
And, just.
Pick your poison.
I mean, it's going to happen to you.
Yeah. And, you know, as we said, he died at 58. And what I have seen, and what I've always felt, that, I mean, can you feel how what Pally is working on is leading, trying to create a new level of consciousness for civilization. Reworking a problem in history, appropriate to this time, addressing the problems of science, addressing a new level of consciousness that might make science more humane, so that he is really contributing to the evolution of our species, is meant to. Some people seem to be meant to do that, don't wish for it. Some people are not. Thank your lucky stars if you're not. If you are and you funk it, there's a huge price. The more you are meant to give, the more nature takes her revenge if you don't. And Pally was a guy definitely, I think, meant to give. And that's, I think, why he died so early. Let's upstretch.